How do you follow that? Okay. Okay. I'll just say, stop sinning, and that's it. Okay. I'm out of here. Okay, let's do what some of the others have done. You ready? Let's. Come on. Come on. Good. You're supposed to say something. It's morning time, so you say.
Good morning.
No. Remember, I've been trying for 3 years to get you to say some Welsh words. It's Shadathiki Hedi. All right. Try it again. Shadathiki Hedi. That's right. Now, the reason for that is simple. As I told you before, and you must listen very carefully, study Welsh because it may be the language in the world tomorrow. God has not brought that as a revelation. It's just something I've been working on. You know, as you come up here, it's kind of interesting because there's water. I always fear, but I saw something else, and I'm curious. So if you'll excuse me, I just want to check and see what this is. Oh, my, kind of interesting. Now, what is that? Haagen-Dazs ice cream, right? What flavor do you think this is? Aha! Let me read the sign on top of it, if I may. There's a spoon with it, too. It says, this is the property. This is the property. It's hard to read. It's in American. This is the property of Dennis Prather. Amazing. Will the finder return to him and will be rewarded with one spoon of ice cream? Mr. I don't understand this, but somehow, someway, Mr. Luker, that's not a very big reward. As a matter of fact, let's have a look and see. Oops. There's nothing in it. Except a picture of Rainer Saloma. You remember the story the other day about... Anyways, it was good. I ate it last night. Well, it's very interesting that we're here on the seventh day of this feast. It's very interesting to follow a professor of flagellism from the University of I spoke to Dan, and after watching that film, ball catching and throwing and so on, I wanted to offer them both scholarships to go to the University of Alberta. Fifty years I've been involved with young people. And so I watch young people very carefully. I'm always fascinated with them. They're a real treasure to us. They're a jewel to this church, as they are for other areas. Today, to be able to speak to you, the youth, is a very, very great privilege of mine. I don't take this lightly, because I've spent, as Mr. Saloma said, I've spent a great deal of my life working with young people. Some of those young people have gone on to be extremely successful. Nothing to do with me, but they applied themselves in the things that we were trying to teach them. They become bank vice presidents. They become leading medical doctors in sports. They become very prominent in litigation. They've been restaurateurs. They've been movie producers. And it goes on and on and on. As almost any profession someone could name, I've got somebody that I've been associated, had the pleasure of working with them. It's very interesting, the focus on the youth. Because you see, I want to make it very clear today to the youth that you are very, very important to God and to Jesus Christ. It's very, very important that you realize that. And therefore, your happiness and your welfare are very important to me and the other ministers that associate with you. That's very, very important for you to understand and to realize. And secondly, when I look out, I stood over there as the children were singing, and I couldn't, you just can't listen and watch them without smiling. Everybody was smiling. And what I saw was a group of young children. As I look out here, I see some youth. But I see more than that. I see the future of Canada. I see the future of this church. And I see the leaders in the world tomorrow. You may be sitting there with a palm quarter, or you may be scribbling notes or doing something, but you're very special to God. He's watching everything, doing everything he can to guide, direct, and support you, as we each of us are, your parents and the ministry and your friends. Well, today, I want to spend a little bit of time and put some attention on heroes and on courage. Ingredients that are important no matter how old you are. You have to have those ingredients to survive and to do things the way that God wants you to do them. See, today's society presents and puts a great deal of emphasis on heroes. Now, these five here pictures remind me of the last defensive line that I coached. All a little bit pot-bellied, a little bit ugly-looking. But the heroes we see in the movies and on television are not really true heroes as we know them. And we'll talk about some real heroes in just a moment or two. What's the definition of heroism? We'd use the word, we kick it around, we talk about it. But what does it mean? Heroes recognize risk and feel afraid. Yes, heroes feel afraid. Anyone that I've ever met has done something courageous. If I've talked to them later and said, well, were you scared? They've always said, yeah, are you kidding? So therefore, we should recognize and realize that heroic behavior involves courage to take a significant risk to achieve a noble goal. And some of you young people are taking risks and are very heroic day in and day out with your friends at school and teachers and your jobs that you have and so on. It's also recognizing and knowing how to handle fear is very important to be a true hero. See, heroism overrides the natural impulse that we all have. If there was a fire here or the building, some of this collapsed, we'd all be fearful. It's a natural instinct. And that's for self-protection. We feel nervous. There's nothing wrong with this. It's just we're ready to either fight or flee. That's the way it always turns out to be. Well, what is basically, when I'm talking about courage, what is courage? The word courage comes from the Latin words cor, C-O-R, which means heart, and the word age, or agi, A-G-E, which means action. Heroes put their hearts into their actions. It's as simple as that. Now, what is fear? We all experience it, but if I asked everybody in this room, you'd come up with just slightly different answer to that question. Fear is a natural and healthy response to threat. That's what fear is. And courage and fear can coexist, and they do coexist. Each of us has gone through something in our lives where we've experienced fear, and at the same time we've had courage to overcome that fear. You see, it's within each of us to battle courage. And within each of us, the battle to maintain and have that courage is won or lost. It's as simple as that. Now, what does cowardice mean? You may have been called a coward sometime in your life. You've done something that somebody didn't like, or they were trying to inveigle you into doing something that was wrong. Well, cowardice is avoiding taking action because of fear. That's what cowardice is. Fear urges the feet to flee, while courage appeals to the person to stand still and not run from the fight. See, cowardice is when we allow fear to overwhelm us and consume us. Remember, life only demands from you the strength that you possess. God doesn't cause us to do and have pressures and problems and fears beyond what we are able to handle. We can handle anything with God's help. The real test of heroism is putting what we know and feel into action. We sit here and we sit in our services and our congregations and we hear ministers and lay members stand up and give sermonettes and sermons, and they talk about various portions of the Bible or some principle. And we're always admonished to what? Put them into action. God tells us to put what he has been teaching for centuries into action. And that's what it is when it comes to the types of things we're talking about today, is to put what we know and feel into action. Now, I said a few minutes ago I would refer to some young people who are heroes. I'm talking 8 to 18, 19, 20-year-olds. We have some phenomenal examples of courage with young people. And the first one, and I hope they're on the board. The first one is Joseph. His brothers, can you imagine this? You're 17 years old and your brothers tie you up and throw you in a hole, sell you into slavery. 17 years old. He overcame that. He was courageous. Miriam, who was Moses' brother, had the job of watching Moses in the basket as it flowed on the river. She had the responsibility, if that basket overturned, she had to save her brother. She was 10 or 12 years old, just a young girl, but very courageous. We have David, and everyone in this room from childhood on up, we've heard the story over and over of David and Goliath. David was only about 20 years old. He wasn't like 35 or 40, an older person, an old man like me. A young man. And of course, we have Josiah, who became a king at 8 years of age. By the time he was 20, he'd taken and put all the idolatry out of his country. By the time he was 20. And then, of course, we have Jeremiah, who was a very, very young prophet. You know, sometimes we look at young people and we think, oh, she's only a young person. Jeremiah was only a young person. And then, of course, we have Mary, the mother of Jesus Christ. You think Mary was about, what would you say, 30, 34? No. In those days, what they were doing, as far as everything I can read, do research on, young girls were married 12 to 13 years of age. A young woman who was 18 or 20 was getting a little old, a little long in the tooth. So here she was, a very young woman with that tremendous responsibility, that tremendous challenge. Then, of course, we have Jesus Christ. We'd read time and time again about Jesus being at the temple. He was 12 years old. He was listening. He was talking with the elders. He was learning. He was learning at 12 years old. He wasn't doodling. He wasn't writing notes to somebody down the aisle. He was learning. What a wonderful example. And then, of course, we come to Timothy. Timothy, as a youth of 18, he accompanied Paul on his journeys. An 18-year-old boy being asked to be with the Apostle Paul, to be there for support, to be there for help. You see, it's very interesting. When we think of these people, Joseph and Miriam and David and Josiah and Jeremiah and Mary and Jesus and Timothy, were they scared? You bet they were. You bet they were. They were young, had very limited experience. They were put into very serious situations. But you see, God had a tremendous trust, faith, and confidence in each of those young people, just as he has in the young people that we have in this church. Just as he has with the young people we have in this church. He loved every one of them, and he gave them the courage that they needed. It's as simple as that. See, each one of them had to face and control fear and learned they had to ask God for the necessary courage to carry out whatever the responsibility was, whatever the challenge was. They didn't do it on their own. They asked God for help. They relied on God. Very interesting, because the Apostle Paul, in using Timothy as an assistant, he encouraged him. Just as your parents encourage you, just as the ministry encouraged you, Paul was encouraging Timothy. Turn, if you will, please, to 1 Timothy, and you'll see it up on top so you can read it. 1 Timothy 4 and verse 12, Paul told Timothy, as he's telling us, especially the young people here, he's telling Timothy in verse 12, don't let anyone think less of you because you are young. Those people that I read the names of that you saw on the screen, they were young. Timothy was young, and you are young. Don't let anyone think less of you because you are young. Paul went on to say, be an example to all believers in what you teach. Timothy was teaching, and some of you are capable of teaching. We saw today young men up here taking on roles of responsibility and leadership. That's a wonderful thing. It shows they have the talent. There's many, many, many more of you that could get up here and do exactly the same thing. Paul continued on to say, be an example to all the believers in what you teach and the way you live, in your love, your faith, and your purity. Until I get there, focus on reading the scriptures to the church, encouraging the believers and teaching them. That is important. I don't know how many times that I've seen young people and wished, I wish you had a Bible. I wish you had a Bible, because that's the Word of God. It's not Lorne Davies' word. It's not Dr. Rick Barron's word. It's the Word of God in that book. See, each of you must understand that you're special to God. Very, very special to God. And you're a person of destiny. You're not some sniveling old ragtail kid. You're someone that God has his hand on, that God wants in his family, in his church. And as was mentioned earlier, this is not my church. This is not Mr. Barron's church or Mr. Saloma's church or anyone else's church. This is God's church. We've got to realize that and remember it. See, what God is telling each of you today to be an example and to be a leader. To be a leader in this church and in society. Well, how can you be an example? Well, by going, as the title of my split sermon is, by going beyond the Ten Commandments. Well, what has he said? How can we go beyond the Ten Commandments? Whoa, there. Heresy. Oh, we're going to have something new here today. No, we're not. We're not going to have anything new. You go beyond by choosing to ask God to be with you, guiding and giving you the courage and the strength and the fear to overcome the fears you face daily. That's a simple thing. Especially in situations that you encounter at your home and at your school and at work. Well, how can I be an example? You know, that seems a little bit strange, unusual for me. By always doing more than is asked of you. By doing more than is asked of you. If I had a football player here and I said, go and get the bag, if he walked over to get the bag, mentally I've made a note. He's not very enthusiastic. If I asked a player to go over and get the bag and he ran over and got the blocking bag and ran back with the blocking bag, I said, there's somebody who really wants to be part of this team. Simple as that. A simple thing like going and getting a bag. In Matthew 5:41, Jesus Christ, that's Matthew 5, verse 41, Jesus Christ encourages us to do more than we are asked. And what this is, it tells us, if someone forces you, that's forcing you, not asking you, forces you to go 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Go 2 miles with him. And what this refers to is the Roman soldiers with heavy equipment would grab somebody and say, hey, listen, help me with this. Put their weighted equipment on the man or the woman, and she or he would have to carry it for a mile with them. Now, what I have today, I have some material that I gathered. When I go to Costco, I don't just get bags of groceries. I do a lot of sampling. You can see that, can't you? I mean, you're being kind. They won't let me into the ice cream section for some reason. I told them that I was a friend of Mr. Luker's, and they said, no, I'm sorry. We have no closets in here in case you open one of these. But I picked up a book, and it's called Anyway. Simple little book. It's written by a man by the name of Kent M. Keith. The subtitle of it is The Paradoxical Commandments. The Paradoxical Commandments. Now, what we're going to do is we're going to spend a little bit of time on these because each of these paradoxical commandments requires courage on the part of the person challenged to do them. We, as a church, as individuals, no, we're fully familiar with the fact that God gave us the Ten Commandments. We can go to Deuteronomy, and we can go to, certainly, Exodus, and look there and see the Ten Commandments. The first four, as we're fully aware also, we're to honor, love, and obey God. The six, the last six, we're told to love our neighbor as ourselves. And in those, we have some very specific things. Told how to deal with our parents and how to behave with our parents. We're told no murdering. We're told no stealing. We're told no adultery. We're told no lying. We're told no coveting. Those are very straightforward. They don't cover some of the things that we meet in our daily lives. And in the time that I have, certainly I'm not going to cover all the things that we meet in our daily lives. But I want to spend just a few minutes on these specific paradoxical commandments. Now, paradox is something that is a response. It's an opposite response to what you expect. So if you said good morning to somebody, they say, how's your grandmother? Or how's the water? And you're not near an ocean. Just something that throws you off balance a little bit. So we'll talk about these just for a few minutes. The first one is, we realize that people are often illogical, unreasonable, and self-centered. Love them anyway. Love them anyway, in spite of being unreasonable. Because you see, love is the greatest gift you can possibly give them. They could be mean, ornery, hard to deal with. But your love might be the thing that is their answer to their problem. It might soften them. The second one, if you do good, people will accuse you of selfish, ulterior motives. Do good anyway. No matter what they accuse you of, do good anyway. Always do what is right and true. I know that's tough for young people because it's tough for seniors. It's got to be tough for young people. But we remember, we'll get into it a little further, we're not alone. We're not alone. When you're successful, and many of you are successful, and many of you will be successful in your lives, you will win false friends and true enemies. Succeed anyways. Don't let those people tear you down. Don't go to their level. I want to digress for just a moment and talk about the handling of enemies, because young people have enemies, or they have perceived enemies. The bully in the school that preys on the young person because he or she is a Christian. Look at that Christian kid. You know the type of thing I'm talking about. The first point is, don't take their behavior personally. Don't take it personally. Don't let them drag you down. The second thing is, when other people see you as their enemy, you don't have to see them as your enemy. Third thing is, stay open-minded. Treat them fairly. No matter what they do, no matter what they say, still be fair. The fourth item, if you don't treat them as your enemies, remember this, if you don't treat them as your enemies, you make it easier for them to one day become your friends and allies, because the person you're having the most difficulty with at your job or at your school one day may be a buddy because of your conduct. He or she changes. And the fifth one is, when attacks come, treat your attackers with patience and compassion. That's very difficult to do. That's very difficult to do. We want to retaliate, or we want to get away from them, or whatever the case might be, or insult them back. That seems to be the style, that human nature. But treat them with patience and with compassion. Going back now, if we can, for just a few minutes, back to those challenges, to go through those paradoxical commandments. The fourth one is, the good you do today will be forgotten tomorrow. You'll go out and you'll cut somebody's lawn, you'll wipe their windows, you'll bring them over a cake or whatever you do for them, sweep off their sidewalk. That'll be forgotten tomorrow. But do good anyway. Do good anyway, regardless what happens. Because doing good often is common courtesy and thoughtfulness. Because they're rude, don't let them drag us to their level. Be polite. Be courteous. Honesty and frankness make you vulnerable. In this society we're in, I deal with people of the world all the time, and I'm very cautious because once somebody lies to me, I watch them like a hawk. Because if they'll lie once, I know they're going to lie again. But I'm not vulnerable to it. And our being Christians does not mean that we should be vulnerable to somebody's lies. It doesn't mean that we should be unkind, do anything that's unfair to them. But we should be honest ourselves and frank anyway. No matter what they do, we should still be honest and frank. The sixth one is, the biggest men and women with the biggest ideas can be shot down by the smallest men and women with the smallest minds. You have a great idea. You might be in a club at school, or you might be on a team or whatever it is, and you come up with an idea, and somebody says, oh, no, we don't want that. No, no way. It costs money. It takes time. You know, they've got all these excuses. Don't let them discourage you. Think big anyway. Think big anyway. Don't be hurt. Don't walk away. Don't go into a shell. Continue to think big. Dream some dreams. People favor underdogs, don't they? Oh, look at that little guy. Look at him. Look at him go. Oh, it's terrific, terrific. But you know what they do? They follow top dogs. They rather sidle up to somebody who is well known than somebody who's kind of a humble, quiet person. Well, fight for a few underdogs anyway. Fight for them. Fight for them and help them. Find a way to help them. Because when you're an underdog, it's a lonely existence. You feel like you're all alone in the world. There's nobody else. You see, underdogs need the help and support that only you can provide at times. Only you as a young person. And you see it in schools when somebody is being badly treated. And in this society we're in today, the people who are not here as youth. Our youth have a tough fight. That's why I admire them so much. Did you see the Vancouver Sun yesterday? A group of young people beat another young person savagely. They were given a year in prison. But no, not in our society today. That's being a little too rough on these nice kids. They reduced the sentence down to 7 months, and they probably will spend maybe a month in there by the time their lawyer wiggles and sniggles and fiddles with the law. What you spend years building may be destroyed overnight. Something that you've worked hard on for a long time maybe since the time you were 14 or 15 years old, and you worked and you worked and you saved and you built this up, but it might be destroyed overnight because of sickness, because of accidents, because of divorce, because of death. Just to name a few things that can destroy something that you've built. Go ahead and build anyway. Build anyway, in spite of what might happen. See, the joy of building will be yours forever. If you create something, whatever it might be, a garden, fix up an old car, do something special for your family, that building, that sense of building will be with you forever. Forever. It never leaves. The ninth point is, people need help, but they may attack you if you do help them. Their false pride. Help them anyway. You may have to change your attack, your style, what you're going to do, but keep them in mind. They need help. Try to find a way to help them. And the last one is, these paradoxical commandments. As you can see, these are beyond murder, and these are beyond lying, and these are beyond stealing, and the sixth final commandments, these are more broad. They're getting out to the actual dealing with human beings. The tenth one tells us, give the world or the people that you deal with the best you have. And if, and this may happen, and if you get kicked in the teeth, give them the best you have anyway. Give them your best. That's what God would want us to do, wouldn't he? See, I believe you're capable of all of those items that I've gone through with you this afternoon, this morning. You young people have more talent, more ability than your parents or I can even fathom. And you don't even know it. That's the very most interesting part of it. You have talent and you have a destiny. God is calling you to be part of his family. Now, many of you are sitting there, as I've said some of these paradoxical items, and you're thinking, as I talked about them, you're thinking, I don't know. I wonder if there's any other way. The situation occurred. Do I have any options? Yes, you do. Yes, you do. If a situation occurs, you can do absolutely nothing. That's one option that you have. The second option that you have is you can take advantage of the person who needs the help. Or you can do the right thing by meeting others' needs and having a good Samaritan attitude. You have that within your power, within your strength. You don't have to be wealthy. You don't have to have a college education. You don't have to have a $60,000, $80,000 a year job. You have that within your power. Well, what type of courage will you need? And where will that courage come from to handle all of the challenges I've talked about today? Well, 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7, the Apostle Paul tells us, for God did not give us a spirit of timidity or fear or cowardice. God didn't give us that kind of a spirit. You don't have that kind of a spirit. But a spirit of power, of love, and of self-discipline. He gave us courage and is giving us courage daily. In Hebrews 13 and verse 5, Hebrews 13 and verse 5, the Apostle Paul reassures us, very important scripture that we should have in our memory bank. God has said, never will I leave you, never will I forsake you. So we say with confidence, the Lord is my helper. I will not be afraid. I will not be afraid. What can man do to me? If God's for me, who can be against me? If you have the courage to face each of those 10 paradoxical situations, you'll be a true hero. You'll be bigger than Spider-Man, far bigger. In Mark 10, Mark 10 and verse 27, Jesus Christ tells us, with man this is impossible, but with God all things are possible with God. All things are possible with God. We can be taken out of serious situations. We can be healed. We can be protected. A young man that I knew, who was referred to earlier today, he had his right leg amputated because of cancer, above the knee. When he was in the hospital, he decided what he would do. He would run across Canada to raise funds to help find a cure for cancer. He called his run the Marathon of Hope. He started on the east coast of Canada. He showed immense courage. He had an artificial leg, and he didn't kind of this. He ran. He ran 26 miles a day. Now, most marathoners will run 3-4 marathons a year. He was running a marathon a day, if you can believe and feature that. Halfway across the country, the cancer returned. It went to his lungs this time. Came back to Vancouver. And he died a year later. The date this courageous young man, his efforts have raised $350 million to help find a cure for cancer. One person had the courage. He could have gone, done a job in life, gone about his business, but he decided to help other people, to do something, to try to find. There was so much pain, and as I'm sure Dr. Barron can tell you, there's tremendous pain and anguish and worry in cancer clinics. And his statement was, it's time that somebody did something to help stop the pain and grief of people. Young children, young men and women, older people, all dying of cancer. Well, I'll ask you, I guess, to realize that when speakers get up here, they use props. That was a prop, that container of ice cream. What I had today, I had a phenomenal thing happen, and I didn't plan it at all, but what I had was, as I had before your very eyes, I had three props. They were living props. We had a young man who led songs. That takes terrific courage. Can you stand here? Imagine yourself standing here looking at an angry mob like yourselves. Hostile. We had a young man give a beautiful opening prayer. And we had a young man who for 40 years plus has served God. He has had tremendous fights on his hands to become a doctor in this world and to maintain and keep the laws of God. It takes a lot of courage. That's not an easy row to hoe. Very, very difficult. Well, we have to realize that in any of these situations, we're never alone. We're never alone. Wherever we are, God is with us. That is important for us to remember, especially the young people, because you go through times when you feel lonely, just as we as adults, older people do. God will always be with you. You can't see him, but he's there. He's there day in, day out, evening, morning, night. Wherever you are, God is with you. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 6, we're told. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 6, be strong and of good courage. Do not fear nor be afraid of them. For the Lord your God, he is the one who goes with you. He will not leave nor forsake you. No matter how extremely difficult people or situations seem to be, remember those words. God's with us all the time. He's with us constantly. And I want to remind you, as we get to the end of this portion of my split sermon, You are important to me. You're important to the ministry. You are important to your friends and to your parents. But I want to have you realize, if you hear nothing else I say today, that you are very, very, very important to God and Jesus Christ. As the song leader said, he wanted the battle hymn of the Republic to ring in his ears next week. I'd hope and pray that you'll hear that one sentence, that you are very, very important to God and Jesus Christ. If you faithfully keep and obey the commandments of God, and they're summarized, as you well know, in Mark 12 and verse 30 and verse 31, about loving God with all your heart and loving your neighbor as yourself. If you keep those commandments, I can promise you that you'll have great peace. You'll have great peace in your mind, and you'll have a joy-filled life. It's as simple as that. The challenge that I mentioned to you today and have given you, those were challenges, if you didn't recognize that. That is to go beyond the commandments. And that requires a great deal of effort on your part, a great deal of courage on your part. But have full confidence that if you do what we've been encouraging you today, you will be successful. You will be successful. You should ask yourself in every situation you find yourself the question, ask this question of yourself. When you're in a situation that you're not sure of, ask yourself this question. What would Jesus Christ do in this situation? What would Christ do? If somebody wants to steal something, or somebody wants to break something, or somebody wants to have drugs, or any of the other things that might harm you, ask yourself, what would Jesus Christ do in this situation? You see, you'll find it'll make a tremendous difference in your life. If you ask yourself that question, it'll make an enormous difference in your life. By being a leader and courageously accepting the challenges that you meet day in and day out, I'm confident that you will change lives. You will change lives. One of those lives you change might be your own. Well, I want to conclude quickly with a summary of those paradoxical commandments, accompanied with a song called Seize the Day. Seize the Day. It's a beautiful song. At the same time, I'd like to give a special thanks to a very special young man. My wife and I have our son and our daughter-in-law, and we have our granddaughter, Crystal, and we have our grandson, Michael. And because of Michael's efforts, we've been able to have a PowerPoint presentation for you, hopefully to appreciate, understand God's Word better. And I want to thank him very much for all of his hard work. It's been a great feast so far. Thank you for allowing me to speak to the youth today. I dream when love sets a lonely day. That's when an angel came down, she spoke to me. You know I cleared my mind, I set me free. I gotta seize the day, hey, I gotta seize the day. That's when an angel came down, she spoke to me. You know I cleared my mind, it set me free. I gotta seize the day, I gotta seize the day. Cleared my mind, set me free.
gotta seize the day. That's when an angel came down, she spoke to me. Knew it cleared my mind and it set me free. I gotta seize the day.